Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, prescribing hope for healthy families here on American Family Radio. Here's your host, Professor, Pediatric Nurse Practitioner, and Mom of Four, Dr. Jessica Peck.
Well, hello, friends, and welcome to my favorite part of the afternoon, getting to spend time with you prescribing hope for healthy families. That is what we do every day. It is what we are going to do today. And I'm so glad that you're here wherever you may be, whether you're in the pickup line at school, if you're at work, if you're driving a truck across this country, if you are patrolling the streets, if you are in your house, if you're cleaning up, if you're taking care of grandkids, all of the things. Thank you so much for tuning in. I really appreciate you being here. It is so encouraging to me to know there are families all across the world who want to raise kids, who love God, and who serve others and want to have good, healthy connections with their families. And we've got a great show for you today. We're going to talk about some issues that are tough, but that need to be discussed. And listen, in a world that is saturated in fear and anxiety, we're just going to refuse to adopt that. We are not going to be fear-based. We are going to be faith-informed. And I want to remind you of the words of Jesus to us. He told us, in this world, you will have trouble, but take heart. Or some versions say, be of good cheer, because I have overcome the world. And we are fighting battles that honestly God has already won. And so we are in the thick of it. And I know some days it just feels like, what else can go wrong in the world? But there's so much going right. There are so many things to be thankful for. And one of the things I'm most thankful for is you, our listeners. You are so faithful to listen and to give and to support the ministry that we have here. And I'm really grateful for you, especially as we're approaching our 1 year anniversary as and we're still a baby, yo. We're still a baby. We're growing, we're learning, and you've been so welcoming, and I'm appreciative of that. Before we get into today's topic, I do want to tell you that American Family Association, AFA Action, does have a resource for you, a one-pager for all abortion-related constitutional amendments. And so you can go and look at that, and it is at afaaction.net/life. That's afaaction.net/life. And I know that as the election approaches, we are all trying to educate ourselves on the issues, and that's really important to do. And it's important for us to get our families engaged and involved and know that we are talking about these issues in a way that's instructive, that's informative, that's uplifting, that is honoring the Lord in everything that we do. So I want to make sure that I'm telling you about that, and that is an important thing as we go on. One of the things we're going to be talking about today is, like I said, we're going to tackle some tough issues today, but there is nothing too tough that we cannot tackle together. So we're going to talk about school bullying and the epidemic that is, and just seems like we are, anytime you open any social media app, that we have bullying. We're worried about our kids being bullied, whether they're at school, homeschool, private school, any kind. It doesn't matter. It just seems like the world is on 24/7. We're going to be talking about parental mental health again. I'm going to revisit that because I think that's really important for us to take care of ourselves. And we're also going to be talking about suicide. Now, I want to give you a warning because I know that that can be a really sensitive issue and a tough issue for some of you who have had personal experience with people you love who have struggled with that, as I have as well, and I have shared that. September is actually Suicide Prevention Month, and that's why it's important that we talk about it. So as we get to September here, I really want to talk about what we can do, what you need to know to help protect the people you love and make sure that they are safe. So let's start by talking about that just a little bit. And again, you may want to adjust your listening audience and be sure that you're cognizant of maybe younger, more sensitive listeners around there, because this is really important, but something that you may want to choose to talk about later. Now, when we're talking about the mental health epidemic that's happening in the United States, often I'm asked, is it as bad as people say it is? And I always say, no, it's not. It's worse. It is hard. I mean, have you looked at the news lately? Have you looked at your credit card, at your checkbook, the stressors of living in a really tough economy where inflation is high and parents are trying to put food on the table and we are worried about global unrest and wars happening and a political unrest and all of those kinds of things. It is definitely happening. And the sad truth of the matter is that over 49,000 people died by suicide in 2022. That is one death every 11 minutes. And many adults even think about suicide or attempt suicide. 13.2 million people have seriously thought about it. 3.8 million of those people have made a plan, and 1.6 million have made an attempt. And what we see especially is a rate among young people, this increasing among young people. And, you know, I think this is where we have to be really thoughtful about the messaging that we're putting out, because as adults that were raised in generations that maybe seemed more idyllic, seemed more simple, a lot of times we give messaging like this is a terrible time to be alive, that the world is just, you know, going nowhere good. And, you know, what hope is there? But there is always hope. There is always hope because we know that God's mercies are new every morning. Now, this is a subject I wrote about in my book, Behind Closed Doors, a guide to help parents and teens navigate through life's toughest issues. So if you want a really deep dive and you want to really know more about it, I would recommend that you pick up that resource. But when we're looking at it, you know, I think about the families who have encountered this, and I can't start talking about this without first saying to those families, if you have experienced this, I am so, so sorry for anyone that has experienced this. It is very, very painful. And, you know, for a time, I actually worked in a community regional hospital, and I encountered a lot of families who encountered this issue very personally. I took care of many kids who were hospitalized after an attempt, and I would take care of them until they could find long-term treatment or a place that they could go where they would be safe until those issues could be worked out. And there is just something so very heartbreaking about that. But I want to tell you right off the bat that one of the phone numbers you should absolutely have in your phone to know about it is this number. It is 988. Now, you may be familiar with 911. You call that in an emergency. 988 is the National Suicide and Crisis Lifeline. It is meant to be easy to remember. So it's 988, just like 911, but for a mental health emergency. And this was launched about 2 years ago, so it's relatively new. You can put it in your phone as a helpline. You can just do it as a helpline, a suicide hotline, however you want to put it in your phone. But anytime you have somebody that you're worried about, you can just say, hey, I just want to give you this number. I just want to share this contact with you in case you're ever in a place where you feel like the world is at an end. If you feel like there is no hope, I want you to have this number. That number is 988. That is the federal crisis number. Now, since its launch in July of 2022, we're just a little over 2 years outside of that launch, you may wonder, how much is this really being used? Well, it may surprise you to know that that number, 988, has actually received about 10.8 million calls, texts, and chats. In just May of this year alone, monthly contacts were over 500,000, and that was about 1/3 more than May of last year and 80% more from May of the year before. Now, part of that could be because we're seeing increased distress in a world that is increasingly stressful, but it also could represent some good news because it means more people know about it, know about that line. And you can call or text or get online and call it and have access to emergency healthcare, emergency consultation, emergency counseling 24/7. You can do that. Now, it varies a little bit state by state, like how many people call, but some of that, what we know is that more people are learning about it. So I think that's really important to know. Let me just give you some advice on what you're looking for. What are signs that someone may be just stressed to the point that they're worried about their own life? Now, some of those signs, there may not be any signs. Sometimes people just don't say anything to anyone. And that's why when they do, it's so important to take notice. It is never okay for any kid, for any teenager, and frankly, for any adult to make jokes about suicide, but sometimes they do because they're just floating that idea to see what kind of reaction they will get. So anytime anyone makes a joke about that, it is really acceptable to stop the conversation and say, you know, that's something really serious. I want to make sure that you're not serious about that. I need to ask you, are you thinking about harming or killing yourself? Now, some of you, that may seem so uncomfortable and you worry and you think, I don't want them to think that I thought that about them. I don't want to give them ideas that they didn't have before. Well, we know from research that asking saves lives. Asking absolutely saves lives. So anytime there is a concern, it is really important just to have an honest conversation about it and just to ask that. Now, if you ask and they say yes, then that is a sign that it is an emergency. If they say, yes, I am thinking about harming myself. Yes, I'm thinking about suicide. Yes, I'm thinking about killing myself. Then the next question should be, do you have a plan? And if they have a plan, that is a life-threatening emergent situation. That means you need to call 911. That means you need to go to the hospital. That means sometimes you may need law enforcement. It depends on whatever is available in your community. You might call 988, the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, to get information, but you need to get them somewhere where they are safe. Make sure that they do not have access to any means that by which they would harm themselves and go and get help with that. Now, if they say, no, I don't have a plan, then that means that this is an urgent situation. So if they're struggling, it means you need to get them in to see a mental health care provider. You need to have access to, maybe that's through your primary health care provider. You need to make sure that safety is important at home, that you're locking up any weapons, any firearms, any chemicals, any medications. You're making sure that's called means restriction, making sure that they are restricted from any means by which they would harm themselves. So that is really important. And it means you need to get this taken care of pretty quickly. So especially if a child or teenager is struggling with depression or they demonstrate suicide language or behaviors, they need to be connected. Now, if the answer is no, I'm not thinking about that, but yet they still seem like they are having anxiety, they are having depression, this is a sign that we need to do something different. Now, most of the time, that gateway is going to be through your primary healthcare provider to say, what can we do? And now there are a lot of different kinds of mental health care providers. And later on this month, we'll be talking about that, about different kinds of mental health care providers and how do you find one that you trust, that shares your worldview, that takes your insurance, that has your schedule. All of those things are really, really hard. But it is important for us to recognize those. And one of the things we're going to be talking about in the next segment is that mental health piece. Now, a lot of people, they don't want to say, oh, I have depression or I have anxiety, because we worry about people labeling us or judging us. Or frankly, a lot of people worry about somebody saying you need to take medication. But you know what? For most of the time, when we have mild symptoms of anxiety and depression, there are so many things that we can do that are not any of those things that help our mental health. I'm talking about things like exercise and nutrition and sleep and making sure that we're having emotional and relational connections with people. Maybe walking your dog or having more sunshine or taking some vitamin supplements. There are so many things that are really simple, but somehow they're not easy to do. So make sure you have that number in your phone. That is 988, the Suicide and Crisis Lifeline. You never know if it might share a life. And when we come back, we'll talk more mental health. I'll see you on the other side of this break. Meet Kelsey. When she found out she was pregnant, she wasn't sure where to turn. But after meeting with the counselors at a preborn network clinic who loved and supported her, and after hearing her baby's heartbeat on a free ultrasound, she chose life.
When a mother looks at her child through a sonogram, it does something to you. You know, I ended up deciding to keep my son, who is now 5 years old today. He's amazing. He brings absolute joy to my heart. I could not imagine life without him. Not only did they help me save his life, they saved my life.
By introducing a woman to her baby on ultrasound, a baby's chance at life doubles. If you have the means, would you consider a leadership gift to save babies in a big way? Your tax-deductible donation of $5,000 will sponsor Preborn's entire network for 24 hours, helping to rescue 200 babies. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or donate securely at preborn.com. That's preborn.com. For Dr. Nurse Mama, I'm Jessica Peck.
Almost gone. How can I carry on if I can't find you? But as the thunder rolls, I barely hear you whisper through the rain, I'm with you. And as your mercy falls, I'll raise my hands and praise the God who gives and takes away.
Welcome back, friends. Welcome back, friends. So listen, we are having some technical difficulties today. So sorry about that. But I hope you got to enjoy that song, because listen, that was a message that we needed to hear, that I need to hear today. I feel like there are storms going around. There are always storms. And I don't know if I feel like our nation is in a storm. My family is in a storm. I am in a storm, but I will praise God in the storm. I will lift my hands, even if my friends around me have to lift them for me, because sometimes I feel like, I don't know, do I have the strength? But we know that God gives us the strength to carry on. So thank you so much. We're trying to get our guest on. In the meantime, I've got some really important things to talk to you about. September is Suicide Prevention Month. So this is a tough subject that we are talking about today. but I definitely need to talk to you about it. We need to talk about this because if we don't talk about it, then we will not prevent it. And that is really what we need to do. Did you know that really suicide is not a new phenomenon? There are 7 instances of it recorded in the Bible. And as God's image bearers, we have to know that Satan seeks to steal, to literally kill and destroy. He is called the father of lies and a murderer whose native language is lies. He whispers convincing deceptions to destroy God's image in you. They're better off without you. No one cares. You're all alone. There's no hope. And all of those are straight up lies because God's love surpasses our ability to even comprehend it. Jesus gave his own life so that we could have life more abundantly and experience the love of Christ and the fullness of God. And nothing, absolutely nothing, separates us from the love of God through Christ, even death. And we can call this to mind and have hope because of the Lord's great love. We are not consumed, but his mercies are new every morning, not every week, not every year, but every single morning. And that is really important. When we're talking about these issues that are so difficult, we really need to think about how we talk about them, especially in front of our teens, in front of our other family, because there's a lot of fear and misunderstanding. And what we know from research is that a lot of people who think about ending their life really don't talk about it. They don't say anything about it. And I think that when we look at that, it's because there's so much fear about how we talk about it and saying, why would they do that? Or we use messaging like, oh, that's so selfish, or why would they hurt their mother like that, or things like that. And really that we need to be cognizant and recognize that sometimes the people that we love are more afraid of living than they are of dying. That is absolutely true. And there's a stigma that happens. And stigma is basically an unhealthy coping mechanism that we use to deal with our fear that something bad is going to happen to us or someone we love. It's basically just social rejection. And when we hear that the unthinkable happened to someone we know, if we're honest, our minds immediately start an internal ticker tape thinking, was there alcohol, mental illness, abuse, debt? And your brain kind of clicks to a stop to find that thing that makes somebody else completely different from you. And then we find relief. We take this comfort from the thought that, oh, okay, there it is. See, that would never happen to me. I would never do that. That's not my family. I'm not experiencing that. And then we share that observation with our loved ones around us. And subconsciously, I think we're trying to reassure them and ourselves that, hey, this couldn't happen to our family. We're okay. But that psychological shift is really critical. And that moment of social rejection is where stigma is born. And it places someone else in a different imaginary category based on a characteristic that we see as undesirable or threatening to our own security. So think about this. So when we hear the news that someone has taken their life, questions that are commonly asked are, how did they do it? Well, that is a question that should never be asked because it really doesn't help anyone. Or I'm not surprised, or I saw that coming a mile away. What a shame, but you know, her father's crazy. Or how did you not know? Are you sure you didn't see any warning signs? Or why in the world would they do that? They had so much to live for. Now let's contrast that with words like this. I'm so sorry. That must be unimaginably hard. I'm so sorry to hear this. How are you feeling about it? This news is sad. It's shocking. I don't know what to say, but I want you to know I care. Those are things that are really helpful messages to send. And when we don't send those things, then we send messages again that are conveying this, oh, that would never happen to me, not my kid, not my family. And the truth is we're all frail human beings who are at risk for desperation. Honestly, that can happen. And listen, I want to raise the attention of parents. Again, we're talking about tough things, but these are things that we must talk about. one of the things that I am seeing that's driving suicide risk, especially among young people, is cyberbullying and online risk-taking behaviors that are happening. So we see kids who are experiencing bullying online. And listen, when we were bullied when we were growing up, the fear was being humiliated in the lunchroom, in the back of the schoolyard, right? Like somebody was going to see us get our lunch money stolen. Someone was going to hear that zinger that was thrown at us, and maybe tens or maybe even if you went to a big school, hundreds of people would see your humiliation. Kids today face humiliation and it goes viral. And then they're bullied by millions of people. Now this happens to kids who maybe don't even have a smartphone. Maybe these kids are not even on social media, but they're videotaped without their consent or even knowledge. Let me tell you a story about how this happened. A girl named Lily, riding a train. She's late teenager, young adult age, and Lily has a condition called neurofibromatosis. It causes little tumors to grow all over your body. And so some people may not know, you know, what that is. Well, she's on the train minding her own business, and she is recorded by a stranger without her knowledge, without her consent. And that stranger changed the trajectory of her life by using two emojis, not even using words. Okay, this is why as adults, it's hard for us to understand the world that we are living in. This stranger used two emojis. It was a monkey face and a question mark. And it was the height of the Mpox, used to be called monkeypox, that epidemic was going. And somebody was asking, does she have this? And she's on a train here in front of everybody. Well, this video did go viral and people had a lot to say about it. Most of it wasn't kind. Her sister saw the video. This is the kind of thing that our kids fear. And this is the kind of real thing that can happen. Kids do not have any relief from cyberbullying that's occurring. And it doesn't matter if they don't have access to a phone. You remember when we were growing up and kids had slam books and they would pass around a notebook and maybe write something that wasn't unkind? Well, now that happens online, and kids that don't even know these other kids can bully kids. And that is a terrifying thought. And this is the world that kids are navigating. And there are online bloggo bullying and slam books that have gone online. Another mom I met, I'll never, ever forget this. I met Megan's mom at a conference, actually. I was talking with her daughter, Megan, 12 years old, beautiful girl, was being bullied at school. Now, this was right at the beginning of the rise of social media. And you know what bullies do? They sniff out any little insecurity that your child has. That insecurity may be real. It may be imagined, that just something that they feel insecure about. Or it may be something that's there that's not very much, but bullies will magnify that. They leverage it. They know how to use that against you. And Megan was bullied about her weight. And it was a tragic thing. It got to the point where her parents actually changed her school, put her in a different school. But she did maintain an online presence with some of the people she had been in contact with before. One of these kids, his name was Josh, and she didn't know Josh, but he had gone to the school she had gone to, and he sent her messages that said basically, "I'm so sorry this happened to you. That was terrible." And her mother was very engaged and watched all of these messages and paid attention to it. And as time progressed, the messages got crueler and got more ugly, honestly, until they finally ended with saying the world would be a better place without you. Well, Megan took those words to heart, and unfortunately, that is not even the worst part of the story, because I remember Megan's mom sharing that she learned that Josh was in fact not even a real person, that he was a figment of the imagination of the girls who had been bullying her and their mothers, who had been participating in this for entertainment. See, this is what happens when bullies sit behind a computer screen and they depersonalize and dehumanize the real person that they're talking about. It's why we see the kinds of things that are said online that people generally don't say in person. Now, I'm sure that this was not the intent, that that outcome was not what the bullies intended, which is often what happens. But what we have to know is that sometimes kids are more afraid of living than they are of dying. They can't think of a way through this social humiliation. Another really tough topic. Again, I'm giving you disclaimers as we go. These are tough topics, but topics that you need to talk to your kids about is sextortion. We're seeing a lot of that. And basically what happens is kids get online and they think that they're having consensual conversation with someone who's their age. And I've seen a lot of really good kids make really poor choices. And this is an important mind shift that we have to have, because we look at kids who make those choices and we may think, oh my goodness, they just rejected their faith. They rejected their values. They, you know, really just made poor choices. And the emphasis is on the latter. When your thumb moves faster than the prefrontal cortex in your brain, we are putting essentially a weapon in the hands of children that they are not equipped to use. And they are impulsive and they can click on just sending something impulsively faster than their brain has the capacity for abstract reasoning to think through that. And so what they do is they send something. Maybe that is an explicit text message that's just words, or an audio message, or a video message. This can even happen in gaming apps. It's really important for parents to know. Not too long ago, I was speaking with a group of eighth graders at a school, and I asked them how many of them had been contacted by a stranger and had inappropriate conversation, bullying, harassment, any other negative interaction with a stranger online. So many of those kids raised their hand. And I said, okay, how many of you have talked to your parents about that? There was not a hand that went up in the room. And they're not telling you because, not because they're trying to be deceptive, but because they think concretely and they think, if I tell you, you'll take away my device and then my social life will be over. So we have got to open conversation with our kids. It's a win conversation. So parents, I encourage you to tell your kids over and over again, you know, you can always tell me about anything. And if you're not telling them to the point where they're rolling their eyes and saying, I know, then you're not telling them enough. And when we look at some statistics about kids experiencing bullying at school, we see about 20% of kids aged 12 to 18 report being bullied during school. And that's 20%. That's one in five kids who are seeing that. Now, the most common types of bullying that we see are being the subject of rumors, being made fun of, being called names, being insulted. But there are also other kinds of bullying to happen. But you know what? As parents, we also need to equip our kids who witness bullying to speak up and to know what to do about it. When we come back, we'll talk about some specific strategies that you can use to address the mental health impact that comes from the anxiety that happens in a world full of bullying. We'll talk about that. You won't want to miss it. Don't go away. We'll be right back on the other side of this break.
Here's Dr. Ligon Duncan from the American Family Studios documentary, The God Who Speaks.
I think the most striking thing to me about the Bible is that it not only reveals God to me, it is God speaking to us, revealing himself to us. But in the process of teaching us about himself, he reveals so much about who we are. I often tell people that one of the ways that I know that the Bible is true is the way that it diagnoses my sin. I'm often reading through a passage and I'm thinking, this was written 3,000 years ago, and yet it perfectly diagnoses the state of the sin of my heart. The only way that can happen is if my Creator is actually the author of the book.
Visit thegodwhospeaks.org.
I'll praise you anywhere. Praise, give him praise, give him praise, and the highest praise. Give him praise, and the highest. He is worthy. Yes, he is worthy of all of the praise.
Welcome back, friends. That song is Praise You Anywhere by Brandon Lake. And we will praise God anywhere, wherever you are, whether you're driving, you're working, you are parenting, you are praying, you're exercising, whatever it is that you're doing, we can praise God. And let me tell you, that really does help change your attitude. It has been a tough time for so many, and I've gotten so many listener emails just struggling just with all kinds of things. And we're talking about one of those very tough things today. So I want to give you a disclaimer here. Make sure that you have time to adjust your listening audience if you have little ears around. And a warning that we're talking about the issue of suicide. It's really tough, but something that we need to talk about. September is Suicide Prevention Month, and we do want to save life because life is just the most precious gift that God has given us, and you can do a lot to help. Do you have the number 988 in your phone yet? Please, please, please put that in your phone number, in your phone as a contact. Write it down. Do whatever you need to do to remember it. It's like 911 that you call for emergencies, but it's 988 that you call for mental health emergencies. And you can just put that in your phone as a help hotline or help and hope or however you want to label it in your phone. And anytime you talk to somebody who is struggling, you can just text them this contact and just say, hey, if you're struggling, it's okay to share your feelings. And here is someone that you can talk with that is available 24 hours, is available 24/7. So that is really important to know. And you never know when that might save a life. Now, I'll tell you, I've got teenagers and young adults as my kids, and I encourage them, put this number in your phone, 988 Lifeline. And whenever they have a friend who's struggling, you can just say, hey, here is a number that will connect you to some services. And so I want to make sure that you have that. Before the break, we were talking about cyberbullying and bullying that's happening in schools and how this is contributing to mental health crisis, to self-harming, and to suicide. So let's pick it back up where we started off there. For bullying, it's important to know, what do you do when that happens? And that can be really hard. There are some resources. You can go to stopbullying.gov or you can go to cyberbullying.org. You can see what the laws are in your states. If you were listening at the second segment, I talked about Megan and Megan's story. There were no laws at the time for cyberbullying. There was no recourse. And that is the tough thing for us as parents, as we see technology evolving before the law can even keep up with it. Another consideration in that and bullying would be emojis. Now, if you don't have a teenager in your house, let me tell you, almost all teenagers are emoji fluent. They can speak just using emojis, and they know what the emojis mean, even when adults, we do not have a clue what they are using those to communicate. But how do you translate that to intent in a court of law? How do you know that this emoji means I want you to harm yourself? You know, it's very hard to show things like that, but kids do know what that means. And so that is important to do. So what do you do if you see bullying? Well, when adults respond quickly and consistently to any behavior that's bullying, they send the message that it's not okay. When adults do this consistently, we are training our kids to do that consistently. So whether you are a teacher or a Sunday school teacher or a life group leader or a coach or any other person who is in charge of kids, you have to realize that you have authority and kids do respect that, even if sometimes it doesn't seem like it. And we need to leverage that authority that we have to give favor, to give credibility, to someone who is being bullied. And so if that is happening in your group by saying quickly and consistently, that is not okay. And speaking up for that, that is really important. So we must intervene immediately. And if kids are younger, or if the situation seems like it is out of their ability to control it, we need to tell our kids, go get an adult. Do not be afraid. Because so many times when kids witness bullying, they get frozen. They just literally freeze where they are. And then they do what kids do. They laugh because they don't know what else to do, or they join in because they're afraid, oh, if I don't join in, maybe this will be me. So modeling that behavior and empowering our kids to speak up and say, hey, it is not okay to treat someone that way. It's not okay to say that. Hey, what you said is hurtful. That's not okay. That is really important to do. And if they need another adult, they need to have no qualms about getting that. Now, listen, I have a lot of failures as a mother, but that is not one of them. All of my kids are always very prompt to say, you know, I'm going to be getting my mom. And they'll say, no, you can't do that. Nope. No, I tell my mom everything. And that's something that she needs to come help us with. You want to separate the kids involved, make sure everyone is safe, meet any medical or mental health needs. Now, sometimes even just one episode of bullying or cyberbullying can be deeply unsettling to a kid. And all kids are going to respond differently. Some kids may take it in stride while other kids are deeply upset. That is okay. That is their God-given temperament. We need to be sensitive to that. We want to stay calm. We want to reassure the kids who are involved, including the bystanders, because that can be hard for them. And model respectful behavior when we're intervening. Now, some of the common mistakes that can be made that we can avoid as adults is ignoring it. Bullying should never be ignored. We don't say that, hey, the kids will work it out without any adult help. Many times they do need assistance in guiding that conversation, to guide them through an apology, or to make sure that you are calling the shots to make sure that the conversation is fair. A lot of times, especially with younger kids, they need some adult intervention and guidance, not lectures or yelling, but they need our guidance. And we don't want to immediately try to sort out the facts. We just want to make sure everyone's safe and figure that out. Don't force other kids to say publicly what they saw. That can be really scary. Eyewitness accounts are notoriously unreliable because different kids interpret different events in different ways. You don't want to question the children involved in front of other kids. Take them to a spot where they have some privacy in the conversation. Now, if that's an adult-child interaction, that should be still in eye shot of other people or with another adult present. And you want to make sure that you're talking to the kids separately. Now, you don't want to also force them to apologize or patch relations up on the spot. You just want to make sure that whoever is being bullied is removed from that situation, that they are safe. And then whatever policy is governing whatever organization you're involved in, you're going to definitely be cognizant of that and follow those. Either your state laws or your organizational policies are really important. Now, things that are really serious, things that need immediate attention, things that you better drop everything and get involved in this, is if there's any threat of a weapon being involved, if there's any threat of physical injury, if there is any threat of serious bodily harm, if there is any report of sexual abuse, or if there is something that is illegal. That is something that you need to stop the presses, stop everything, and make sure that you're addressing that. Now, sometimes my kids at times have come and reported this to me and said that they have witnessed something like this happening online. Well, that happens. That is a real risk you need to talk to your kids about, because it's one of the responsibilities that comes along with social media. So many times we worry about our kids, you know, using it appropriately, or are they going to meet a stranger or things like that. But they do have an obligation to report some of these severe things. If they see someone online threatening someone else, and I'll give you an example from my own life. One of my kids saw another kid posting online threatening violence against a teacher. Well, a lot of times kids think, oh, I don't know what to do about that. Well, they have an obligation to respond. It's social media. You can see if that was seen or if it was not seen, and they have an obligation to report that. That's one of the things you need to talk to your kids about. If they're on social media, talk about, ask them, what do you see as your obligation to respond to something that you see that's potentially harmful online? What would you report or what would you not report? That is really important to do. And so those things all need to be, that may have law enforcement implications, really important. Then once you've gotten, stop that bullying on the spot, when you have gotten everybody safe, you want to, if you're an adult trying to figure this out, you want to keep all the involved children separate, get the story from adults, kids, eyewitnesses, and that's really important to happen. And then we need to find out, is this bullying or is this not? Because sometimes we use the word bullying too much. Sometimes kids can say something unkind or careless, but it maybe doesn't rise to the level of bullying. So we need to be careful also in how we're using that word. So for one thing, you got to consider the history between the kids involved. Is this the first conflict they've had, or are there repeated conflicts? And then we're looking for a power imbalance. Now, this is one of the interesting things that has evolved in cyberbullying, because before, in old-fashioned, the old school days, the power imbalance was usually a bigger kid picking on a smaller kid. But now the power imbalance is much more nuanced. So power in cyberbullying comes from social influence. So if someone with 5,000 followers is bullying someone with 100 followers, well, they can really get a keyboard warrior army really quick to have insult after insult. That's really hard to do. And then, has it happened before? Is this habitual? Is it repeated? Those are things that will rise to the level of bullying. Another thing that we want to really think about is romantic involvement. Now, one thing that we're seeing a lot of talk about, an increase, is an increase actually in teen dating violence. Now, that seems like, how in the world could that be? But that is something that is actually very, very serious. So if there is any threat of violence between dating partners, that's something that needs to be addressed really, really quickly and taken seriously and talked about. So those are really tough things, but we want to talk about also the mental health impact that happens, because when these things happen, they can be traumatic. And sometimes we can pull out lines from the old school playbook saying, toughen up, oh, shake it off, oh, keep a stiff upper lip. When really, it's harder than that. It's more complicated than that. Sometimes these things can really shake kids' sense of security, their sense of confidence, their sense of safety in the world, and they need to know that they have an adult who is willing to go to bat for them, who recognizes their feelings. So if your child has experienced bullying and they are experiencing a change in their everyday behaviors, like they're not able to engage in the things that they love and that they need to do every day, they're having trouble getting out of bed and getting dressed and going to school and having fun, then that's a sign that, hey, maybe this really is impacting them. And so recognizing that those kinds of events can be traumatic and responding early is really important. If you missed my show a couple of weeks ago, I did a show on toxic stress. And so you may want to go back and listen to that, because that is the difference between just experiencing things that are normal life experiences. We all will experience unkind words from time to time. We all will experience unkind treatment from time to time. But if we have some buffers, if we have some resilient factors in the family, our kids are going to be okay. For most of the time, they are going to be okay. And that is something that we have to think about. And a lot of times we think about, oh my goodness, all of the challenges that face our kids and all of the negative circumstances that we're facing and all of the bad things. It's easier to do that. But we have to think of the good things too. So if you are in a home where your family is eating dinner together at least 3 times a week. And listen, it doesn't have to be gourmet. It doesn't have to be candlelight. There doesn't have to be jazz music. Nothing like that. If you are just sitting at the table together, looking eye to eye, talking heart to heart over peanut butter and jelly, that is a resilient factor in a family. That helps. Are you a family who is praying together regularly? That helps your kids. That helps your kids be resilient when they encounter stress, when they encounter these tough things. Are you in a family that's going to church together regularly? Are you in a church and a family that regularly practices gratitude? Do you have a bedtime routine, a morning routine? All of these things are 52 habits for healthy families. If you've been following along, we've been talking about those. You can go to the Dr. Nurse Mama Coaching Minutes, and we're already way into week 38. There should be 38 habits there for you to listen and see what kind of factors do you have in your family that make you resilient. Well, listen, may the Lord bless you and keep you and make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. And I'll see you right here tomorrow with Billy Joust talking baseball.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.